Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. Again, we have a very, very important, powerful program to share with you today. And before I introduce my guest, I would like to ask you, our listeners, to please feel free to contact us. Matter of fact, we'd love to hear from you. Any ideas, thoughts, topics you'd like us to investigate and provide for you, delighted to do it. Let me give you two ways to reach us, either by regular mail, and I'd ask you to send your comments to Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. The zip code in Greenwich is 06836. That's 06836. If you prefer emailing us, you could do so at the following: clemons10@aol.com. Let me spell that for you. C-L-E-M-O-N-S, the number 10, at aol.com. While you're on the computer, I'd like to encourage you to go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today. That you could find at the following website, spirituality.org. That's spirituality.org. .org, and that's important because .com will send you somewhere else. And so we'd love to hear from you. Now, my usual co-host, Ms. Dorothy Riera, is not available for today's program, so I'm on it myself with my wonderful guest. And I'd like to introduce our guest today, Peter Philip. Peter, welcome.
Thank you. I'm good to be here.
Well, delighted to have you here.
Thank you.
Matter of fact, I'm deeply honored and thankful, immense gratitude for being here today. Our topic today is going to be clergy sexual abuse, and survivor of that is Peter. And before we get into anything, though, Peter, I would ask you to maybe share a little bit about your background in your work, if you would.
Sure. I grew up in Bridgeport. I'm one of 10 children, number 4.
Oh, wow.
Very active in anything Catholic. I went to St. Patrick's School, to Notre Dame, Catholic colleges. My first job in teaching was at Aquinas in New Britain. I went on from there to do years and years of parish work, mostly religious education. Mm-hmm. And when the AIDS crisis came along, I took a few courses in how I could be helpful, volunteering, and that led to me becoming the executive director of the first AIDS hospice in Connecticut.
Really?
Oh, yes.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
I was pretty shocked, too.
Yeah.
But we got to put together the unit as we wanted it. I hired the doctors, the nurses, the social workers, and all of that. Mm-hmm. All of our residents were street people. Mm-hmm. We had so few gay men that I could name right now. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of work to do. We tried to reconcile families before people died. Very often people died and left no one, so that left me to bury them someplace and to see to an undertaker, et cetera, et cetera. And
so that because there were so many street people, that there was not perhaps not a connection. Did you find, besides that, some mental health issues with them?
Oh, lots of mental health and lots of drug abuse.
Lots.
Yeah,
that led to it.
Usually the drug abuse is what separated families, theft, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was a very, very rewarding experience. I met people I would never have known in this world. And I got to sit with about 200 people when they died. So it was life-changing.
Yeah.
Life-changing.
Yeah. Then after that, it was off back to teaching.
Back to teaching.
Okay.
And I was at Notre Dame High School in Fairfield or Bridgeport, whatever we say now. And I retired from there 3 years ago, and here I am.
Very good. Well, our topic, of course, even though we got into another topic that was really good, is the idea of the survival of clergy sexual abuse. That topic is something that unfortunately seems to, it tends to rear its head somewhere in the world. And I guess that says something about the people involved, about the whole tendency toward that act. And I'd love to hear your story to degree, and this is your program, this is your forum, to degree or whatever you wish to share with us. And Also, I presume your experiences speaking to other survivors, too. So why don't I simply ask you to tell whatever part of the story you want to share?
Sure. When I was about 6 or 7 years old, you might remember that the Holy Cross Fathers came to Bridgeport to run Notre Dame High School,
yes,
which Cardinal Sheehan had just opened.
Mm.
And my parents were very involved with the development of it and raising money and all that, and became friendly with some of the priests. And one of the priests would invite me to the Holy Cross Fathers pool, which was behind the house where they lived. And that's when the first abuse took place. And then that stopped. I think it, a couple of summers is all I remember, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to grammar school, and when I got to Notre Dame, he started again. And it lasted for 2 years, every Saturday in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the same activity. Now, somehow, I don't know how, I was able to push that way back in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I never told a soul, not a soul. And in 1990, the dams burst, and something had to be done. So the Institute of Living in Hartford had a program called the Retreat Center. And the retreat was a place for people to go who were professional, mostly religious or involved in the church like myself. And we worked very hard in peeling away all the stuff that had happened in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually, with working with a therapist, a psychiatrist that I liked very much, I was able to tell the whole story, the absolute whole story. And then the Connecticut Post asked to write a story about me, and so I thought, well, I came out so far, I might as well come out all the way.
Yeah.
So today, most people are aware that I was abused by a Holy Cross Father as a child and then as a young man. I think that even though I knew what I was talking about, I didn't talk to the Diocese of Bridgeport or the Holy Cross Fathers for a very long time.
Mm.
Because I didn't want that to be my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But looking back on it, of course, it colored my life because it made me afraid to trust people and afraid to commit myself. I spent years and years and years in the seminary, and when it was time to be ordained a deacon, I couldn't do it because I didn't think I could commit myself to it.
Mm-hmm.
I felt unworthy or something like that. Later, I went with a very nice woman. We had a great times together, but when it was time to be serious, I couldn't do that either.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I would be cutting her short. So she went off and married someone else. So I can't blame all the woes of my life on this one priest, but certainly most of them stem from that. You know, child abuse is absolutely startling.
Mm.
I'll tell you this little story. I went to St. Patrick's School, and we lived in Long Hill.
Yes.
So kind of quite far.
Mm.
So we used to have to stand on the corner on Main Street and get the bus home after school. And every once in a while, this big black car would pull up, and he'd open the doors, and it was only my family waiting for the bus, and it was Father Tom Guinan, and he was the curate at St. Patrick's,
mm-hmm.
very young priest,
mm-hmm.
and he drove one of those cars with the big fins that were so popular back then. Yeah, right, those old cars. And he'd say, come on, I'll give you a ride. So we'd go up Main Street, we'd stop at the Ambrose Pharmacy, we'd all sit at the counter and get an ice cream, and then he took us home and he'd chat with my mother and off we went. I thought all priests were Father Guinan. He was the kindest, nicest, just an all-around good man, good priest, and a good friend to us. So I had other experiences that were very nice with priests as well. And I never blamed those other priests for what that one priest did. They say one bad apple. But he didn't spoil it for me, not right away anyway. It took a long time. And I have a great deal of respect for the clergy. And I've worked with lots of priests in parishes and schools and people that are dying. And I've always been impressed with people's ability to sacrifice, to give, to want to do more, to help. It's an amazing thing to be part of the church. I always say, you know, that I remember before all this stuff happened that it was fun to be Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say to Bishop Frank, I think we should bring back the fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
oh, boy.
Ask yourself this question. What would we be doing today if we weren't talking about this?
Mm-hmm.
Other great things. Now, maybe this had to happen. I don't know. But for me, we have an opportunity today with Bishop Frank and the other abusers and now working with the clergy to bring back, to ask people to re-celebrate their baptism, come back to the church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we still have many, many, many good men in the clergy. We have many good lay people ministering in our parishes.
Mm-hmm.
And we need them and we need the parishioners. You don't have to be afraid. I mean, you know, I wish I could say there'd never be another scandal.
Mm-hmm.
But Aaron Neal works very hard on the prevention part of this and helping people to weed out people who may present a danger to our children. And don't forget, it's not only children. If you call high schoolers children, I don't think we do, but they all think, of course, nothing could ever happen to them, but it could.
Mm.
Absolutely, it could.
Yeah.
And, you know, today we live in a world where drugs and liquor readily available, and we all know that we make very poor choices under those influences.
When I don't know if you've ever considered part of your own coming to dealing with circumstances that you went through and being abused, whether you thought much about, well, exactly what was going on in the abuser's mind, what was going on in themselves. Is this something that is somehow genetic? Is it something that was just a free will choice of this person, that there was some sort of sexual, you know, repression that they never should have gone into the priesthood to begin with? They didn't recognize. I don't know if you, you know, I mean, you have enough to go through with yourself. Never mind.
One thing I've always thought that I feel, I don't know about anybody else, but I don't think anybody grows up hoping to be a child abuser.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may be abused yourself. Bad things may have happened to you. But then somehow something happens. I'll tell you a little story. I worked with a priest, and he, there were suspicions that he was an abuser.
Mm-hmm.
So they took him out of the parish, and he was doing, I forget what he was doing. And they asked me at the AIDS unit if I would take him on as a part-time chaplain. Well, nothing had been said yet, so I took him on. And we figured that because we didn't have any high school-age boys, that everything could be good. And for about a year, it was absolutely great. Everybody loved him. Really a nice guy. But at some point, his illness, sickness,
whatever it is,
reared its head. And so I had to fire him, and I had to notify the Archdiocese of Hartford and all those terrible things you have to do when these things happen.
Yeah.
And so he sabotaged himself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he blamed me for him losing his job. Mm-hmm. So I never had an opportunity to really talk with him again.
Yeah.
But I think that in his case, it was alcohol. When he drank, give alcohol to kids.
Yeah.
And the rest, we know the story.
Yeah.
My abuser was a young man. He was an only child. His parents had him late in life. He went off to the seminary. and got himself ordained and almost immediately began abusing. Now, whether if he had done it before that, I don't know.
Yeah.
What was in his head? I wish that he had lived longer, but he died very suddenly at 52 of a heart attack. And so, but I would have asked him, you know, what was this about? Why'd you pick me? I always wanted to know that. Why me? What did you see in me that made you know that I'd never tell? And, you know, I was at Notre Dame with two other brothers, and the priest used to hire kids to wash the dishes up at the residence. And so we were the dishwashers, the three of us. So we knew the priest pretty well. We had a lot of fun with a lot of the priests. They were great. But I couldn't bring myself even to tell one of them, even though I trusted them and liked them, and they liked me. It was somehow I was shamed. You know, and then so many questions come up, you know, sexuality, you're gay, you're straight, you know, all those kinds of things. Right. And it takes so long. I probably shouldn't say this, but I had the same psychiatrist for 23 years, and I'd still have him if he didn't have the nerve to die. But I liked him because he was smart, because he had a spirituality, and because he was kind. And those are all the things that I lacked in my life. And so 23 years, sometimes twice a week, I saw him. And I, with him, we try to figure out the mind of the abuser. But he always thought that abusers could not change. And so there'd always be that risk.
Yeah. But the effort was for, I'm just wondering, what and then again, if you want to share anything, or not share anything, that's fine, but I'm just wondering, in your years of visiting psychiatrists and going through this process, I just want, what type of roadblocks did you have to overcome in order to, I guess the goal was being able to share not only the experience, but share what has happened to you and how to put it all together.
Biggest roadblock to me, because I was abused the first time at such a young age, I almost immediately felt outside of the family circle. Nobody else got abused. My brother, two older brothers, they were at the same school, you know, and he could have done the same thing to them, but he didn't. He did it to me. And as a result, that outsideness exists to this day. We just didn't have the same experience growing up. And so I was very fortunate. I had a grandmother and an aunt who lived together, and I spent all my time with them. And they loved it because they had company, and we'd go to New York and take trips and all. So I was always a little bit different than the rest of my siblings. And that continues to this day. I think what else it did to me was, though I still trusted clergy, I didn't have any trouble with that. It was my own trust in people, my own trust that I felt was shaky. So if I promised, I was very involved in the church in Hartford, in the Archdiocese, and Archbishop Whalen was a friend of mine. And so one day I said to him, I think I'd like to become a priest. He said, I've been waiting for you to tell me. And so I went off to the seminary, but it was a terrible experience, terrible. I felt so guilt-ridden, like I shouldn't be there. And the Archbishop really, he said he understood, but he never did. So I've had a long life of doing good things. Well, it was long, I'm 67. I've had a time of doing good things. And I think, not that it's not a good thing to do good things, but I really think that I'm always trying to make up for what happened to me. I'm always trying to prove that I really wasn't the person he thought I was. And I'm only have to prove it to myself. Nobody else really gives a darn. So that I always used to say to the kids in school, I know the question God's going to ask you when you die. And he's going to ask you, did you become the person I created you to be? And I think that sexual abuse or not, I should be able to say yes to that question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I have to work very hard. But I also think the perpetrators have to work very hard to change. We know God forgives. We know that. We bank on it.
Right.
And we'd be nowhere without that. So all of us, whether we're the clergy who have been so treated so unfairly by the communities and by the church and everybody else, the perpetrators, who I don't know where they went off to, and the survivors who, as you know, they didn't know what to do with us, so they gave us a few bucks and told us to go away.
Mm.
So you have to overcome all those things, whether you're the priest, the perpetrator, or the survivor. Are you the person God created you to be?
Mm.
Big question.
I ask, what would help you or any survivor to accomplish that task? What either attitude or prayerfulness or whatever it may be that really says, this gives me what I need to really work at that and accomplish it?
About 18 months ago, Bishop Frank gathered a group at Fairfield University. And before we could do anything else, everybody had to tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
So there were 18 people, and it was awful, as you can well imagine.
Oh.
Well, I was the last person. The bishop was sitting next to me, and it went all the way around the room, and then it came back to me. And I, like everybody else, said what I said. And we had to do that. We had to get that over with, in a sense. Because then we could concentrate on other things, like becoming the person God created us to be. So now, 18 months later, we're a committee, but I never call us a committee. I call us a group. We're friends. We're not crying all the time. We're not going through these stories all the time. We're trying to just be friends, to support one another as friends do, and be an example. We're trying to gather other survivors in who could benefit from this kind of experience.
What do priests need to know about their own selves? Now, I'm not talking about, you know, let's say abusers. You know, would you like to see them be able to do?
Mm.
You know, but also I'm thinking of going back to the idea of fun. You talked about should have fun again. I thought of myself when I was first ordained in St. Thomas in Fairfield. I had the school. I went to the St. Thomas school, and I remember taking. You know, I had a bunch of kids in the eighth grade. After school, a lot of times I'd hang around or have a little youth group. I remember taking a bunch of them, maybe 8 of them, 10 of them. We just walked down the street to the local Dairy Queen. You know, we all were walking down there following me. You know, it's like, you know, we're singing a Dairy Queen song. And, you know, and we went there, went back, and I said, you know, I was thinking of Bing Crosby. You know, I was thinking myself of the old days. And I said, well, this is the kind of thing I, you know, part of the experience that I want them to have, the kids to have.
Absolutely.
And now I'm scared to death when little kids come up to hug you.
Oh, absolutely. You know? I understand that. When I worked in parishes and little kids, same thing. I'm not a priest, but I'm a man. I think that priests need to tell their stories like we needed to tell our stories.
Mm-hmm.
Get together. Have dinner, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And how did this affect you? They've never had an opportunity to really sit down with somebody that cares about them and let it all hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And once they get by that, sky's the limit.
Yeah.
I think that priests were painted by the same brush as perpetrators. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. I often say that priests and victims or survivors are in the same boat.
Mm.
They wanted me to go away, so they threw some bucks at me, and they wanted the priest to shut up and keep going. Doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as we're beginning to get a little bit toward the end of the program, what I'd like to know is on as high a note as we can, to take a look at what's going on now. What's happening with the, you know, relationship with the diocese? What's happening?
The bishop has been very, very supportive. We meet with him regularly. We are planning today, this very day, I'm going to, with two other people, talk to the priests about this very issue.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to, in October, we had in October a healing mass, and we're planning now for the rest of the year. It's very positive. We are very, very fortunate to have the people we have, Aaron Neal, in that Office of Safe Environments. We're lucky to have Bishop Frank. We're lucky to have people in the Catholic Center and everywhere that want to help, that really want to help.
Mm.
And if you get a chance, we made a video. One is 6 minutes. One is 2.5 minutes. And you get it. Everybody can watch it. It's going to be on YouTube. You can get an insight into what it's like to be a survivor, but a survivor who's moved on. You know, nobody wants to live in the past.
How would a person find that on YouTube? What
well, I think
for?
Right now it's not on YouTube
not yet.
Okay. So what I would do is check with the Safe Environment site on the diocesan website.
The Diocese of Bridgeport.
Right.
Okay.
And they'll be able to direct you.
Ah, great. That's good. I the more this comes out, the better. The other is just the nature of institutions. You know, I mean, there's abusers at Yale. There were abusers in high school coaches in the public system. And
absolutely.
Everywhere. Is there something that the institutions those who administrate need to do in regard to this? We know that it was like somehow protect the institution, to do what you can, keep it quiet, make it, you know, go away, like you said. What really needs to be done?
What really needs to be done is the prevention piece. And to be very careful about the people we introduce to our children. Doesn't mean everybody's bad and we shouldn't make the kids anxious and afraid of all people. Because you and I know, most people are great. What we need to do is to let people know that we only have the best interest of their children in mind. That we want to, you know, the priest is the leader of the parish community. And as far as I know, the church is all about building up the kingdom of God. So we need to figure out a way that we can all have our roles and respect those roles, work together, and then the church will be fun again.
Mm.
You know, social action-y things, people doing things. You know, when I was a kid, Father Hanover was the pastor. We went to his lake house and we swam into the lake and ate hot dogs and had a great old time. We can go back to those things.
Yeah.
But we're never going to go back to a time when we're not doing things like Veritas and safe environment.
Yeah, we you need it. Well, Peter Philip, thank you very much for being on Thoughts for the Week. I look forward to another program. May God bless you and all your days and all your good work.
Thanks very much.
And to our listeners, thank you for being with us on Thoughts for the Week.